Welcome to the Drafting Table Podcast, hosted by Dominion Due Diligence Group. This is the first episode of many talking about the hottest trends in the commercial real estate industry. I'm your host, Daniel Walton, Director of Sales and Marketing and Senior Account Manager at D3G. And today I have with me Stephen Ivanko, the Director of our Energy and Sustainability Group. This is, as I mentioned, episode one of many, and we're going to be producing short 10 to 20 minute podcast discussing the hottest trends and the most common questions that we're seeing on a weekly basis here at D3G. This week, we're going to be talking about something that's been on everyone's radar, which is the 3-year waiver rule and applications, which also utilize the green MIP process. There's been a lot of new information that's been distributed, whether from lenders or different HUD offices, but also the new 2020 draft of the MAP guide is out. So we're going to be discussing some of those changes and some of the things that we've all been anticipating so that you can be better prepared when you're working with your clients. So first, I'd like to introduce Stephen Ivanko. He has been producing 223F SEPs for Green MIP on a regular basis. He's been in almost every airport in the country over the last few months, and he also just recently won NGBS Green Verifier of the Year for the second year in a row. Stephen, just came in this morning, just got off an airplane. We're sitting 6 feet apart. We have our masks on. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be off of the off of airplanes. You know, it's been a hectic 2020 for various reasons, but I'm really pleased with the progress that we've had at D3G with regards to Green MIP. We've been helping a lot of clients and a lot of construction teams through getting their NGBS green certification for new properties. So we're expecting a lot of properties. And we've also been doing a lot when it comes to the 223F, as you said, in terms of getting energy data, getting benchmarks, and then getting those properties ENERGY STAR certified. But most frequently, we've been answering a lot of questions about this green MIP and the 3-year waiver. And so we're happy to work with clients and help them through that process as much as we can.
Yeah. You know, when you talk about answering a lot of questions, I pulled some data. And over the last 3 months, you know, since HUD issued the 3-year waiver guidance back in March, 20% of our bid requests have been for properties constructed in the last 3 years. So there's a huge market that's been opened up by this guidance. And then when you combine that with the green MIP, it's a home run for a lot of lenders and a lot of borrowers that are either looking to get into that, into HUD finance, or also interested in the green MIP process as well.
Absolutely. And it's, we've helped a lot of clients through this green MIP process, clients that have been, it's their first time going through the process, and we faced a lot of unique situations. But this 3-year waiver really creates a new wrinkle in terms of how the program was designed. But I'm excited because the 3-year waiver, I believe, has opened the door for a lot of recently constructed properties to access HUD financing. And many of these projects are going to want to secure that green MIP discount because it is so such a great ROI for them. And when you add in the fact that these buildings are all recently constructed, they would have adhered to the most recent energy conservation codes. They're likely to benchmark score well and be very energy efficient. The challenge is it's not quite that easy because when HUD released the Green MIP guidance back in 2016, that 3-year rule was in place. And the program requirements are really not designed for properties that were so new that you don't even have 12 months of data. Energy data on how they're performing. And so, you know, to sort of talk about that situation, I always find it useful to step back and talk about what are the key elements of the Green MIP program. And I always describe it as there's 3 key components. Number one, you have to show evidence of energy efficient performance. Number two, you have to get a green building certification. And number three, you have to commit to do the benchmarking over the life of the loan.
Yeah. Those are the 3 pieces that have been in place for a little while now. I think one of the biggest catches we see under the current guidance is the data. It seems like every utility is different in how their process works to provide data, whether it's directly to the ownership, whether it's to us, whether it's to the lender. But the biggest thing that I see that you remind me about on a weekly basis when we're working on incoming projects is, do they have 12 months of consecutive data at 80% occupancy? And that's been one of the big catches for a while, but there may be some doors opening for projects based on some of this new guidance. Maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the options.
Yeah, it's interesting because when this first sort of started popping, when the three-year waiver went into place and we started first getting these questions, part of the, you know, we went to HUD and we're asking them questions about it. And the initial sort of response we were getting is you really have to wait until you have that full 12 months of data. The 80% occupancy target is really based on an Energy Star existing building requirement, that program in terms of what they require for you to be able to get certified. So, you know, the answer of, well, let's wait until we have 12 months. No one is excited to wait to get their financing done. So we started having conversations with HUD about, well, what if we performed energy modeling, you know, a SETI? What if we performed and we're able to show basically that the property is going to perform well and we have a high degree of confidence in that? Would that work? And if you look back to how the initial program was designed, we kind of thought that made sense because initially HUD had offered some flexibility under the current guidance for properties that couldn't acquire 100% of tenant data because basically maybe the utility just wouldn't play ball with us. HUD had set up this process where you could get 25% of the tenants to provide data. We could do basically a extrapolated energy benchmark and prove that the property looked good, looked like it was energy efficient. And then as part of that, you would do an energy audit, prove that you're able to demonstrate that score, commit to maybe install energy meters and data loggers so that you could get the 100% data. And then after the loan closes, you have 12 months of data and you have the 100%, then be able to get the Energy Star existing building certification and go back and check that box on a green building certification. So initially when we were having these conversations, I was starting to worry, well, we really feels like we have a dead zone for the program where you just have to wait on these newer properties. The upside was, you know, at ELA, we saw signs that there was going to be sort of this grandfathering window that might open up for some of these new buildings. And we've recently seen guidance from HUD on an option that uses some of the language in the new 2020 map guide, the proposed map guide.
That's exciting. You know, we had, when you talk about opening doors for properties that were in between in that dead zone, in Richmond, Virginia, back in 2017, we were working with a couple of lenders that were looking for D4 new construction finance projects right here in Richmond. HUD only approved one of the four that were proposed based on the market study. All four of the properties have been constructed since. They've all occupied at, you know, a different speed. So you have one property. Now, let me just state this. Two of these properties are owned by the same developer. One of their properties leased up a little faster, so they were able to get that 80% occupied 12-month data, and the other wasn't. So that's a difficult conversation to have when you're trying to explain to the owner of two properties that that are pretty much identical, that one can qualify and the other can't. So it does open up a lot of opportunities for properties, and I think that's exciting. And I think what also could be exciting is some of the rules around that scoring, because it sounds like at ELA, the slide was saying 90 or above on your SETI score, but we're hearing some murmurs throughout the industry that maybe it's still going to be sticking with that 75 or above for the score. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you've seen there?
Sure. Yeah, happy to do that. What HUD is now saying we can start to do is leverage some of that language from the new proposed map guide. And basically, this is going to apply to just properties that have gotten their certificate of occupancy within 3 years prior to the date of application. And basically, the way that path is going to work is if the applicant can submit with the application an Energy Star for existing building certification, which would mean that they had the 12 months of data. So in your example, the one property that had 12 months of data, 80% occupancy, we could take them that path and do it pretty cost effectively, right? But if you've got a property that doesn't have that, what HUD is now saying is you could do a SETI, which is energy modeling and benchmarking based on as-built drawings and sample results, maybe to a certain extent, but you could use that to show an Energy Star score of 75 or better. Now, initially at ELA, there was a discussion of, well, these are brand new buildings. Maybe we should have set the target at 90, and that's what was indicated. But what we're now seeing looks like the bar may still be the 75 that we've historically seen. The other things that are in this new guidance is that, you know, when the SETI is provided, the owner must commit to earning an Energy Star existing building certification within 3 months after they have the full 12 months of data. So this would obviously be after the loan closes. Once they've got the lease up that they need to get to 80%, they've got the 12 months of data. So they lenders should make sure that that property has a path to get 100% data through the utility. And then the other thing I would also call out is that HUD is said that with those applications, the CNA should be prepared for the property that indicates that all future replacements should be Energy Star certified appliances, et cetera. And of course, they're still going to need the data collection plan and commitment to ongoing benchmarking.
Yeah. So to me, it sounds like more than ever, you need to be working with a group that understands not only the CNA e-tool, but the energy process, because everyone's thinking short term right now. All the requests that I'm seeing in our account management division is fast, fast, fast. How quickly can we get this submitted to HUD? But if you're going to take this new proposed alternative approach where you're going to have to get that Energy Star or Energy Green Building certification 3 months after, you need to think about that from step one. That's not something that should be a surprise after the fact. So I really appreciate you kind of bringing that to everyone's attention. So one of the questions we were going to ask was, what's the ideal property that kind of fits that 3-year waiver exemption, but also can qualify for the green MIP? And our answer was different a couple of weeks ago than it is now. I don't know if you wanted to elaborate on any properties out there that are an absolute slam dunk.
Yes. So certainly a building that's built in the last 10 years in a state that's on a advanced energy conservation code is probably going to score really well in terms of the energy data that they have. The other thing that we typically see, anytime you're in a northern climate and you use natural gas for heat and for heating your hot water, you tend to score a lot better. But the other thing I would add to that is when you think about sort of this guidance is any property that already has a green building certification, you sort of, you know, from new construction. So for instance, if they earn Energy Star certified homes, they earn NGBS during construction, that just removes, it sort of checks one of the boxes with HUD that's taken care of. And then that final piece is what I described, which is just knowing that you've got a path to get 100% data from the energy data from the tenants through the utility is really going to help make your deal move faster.
That's great. And it's, today we're talking about these recently constructed properties, but I am seeing a lot of requests for new construction. It's kind of firing back up, which is great to see after the last few months of not issuing any proposals for new construction. So it's nice to see. Obviously, there's benefits to energy efficiency when it comes to design, marketing, and now finance is really, adopting green as well. I also mentioned earlier that, your NGBS green verifier. For a lot of these newly constructed properties, is there any advice that you would give them today while they're breaking ground to set them up for success, whether they're going green now or potentially down the road if they wanted to do a 223F takeout?
Yeah, so that's an interesting point because I've had a number of conversations with developers where they're doing conventional financing, but they're thinking for the long term of wanting to get HUD financing in the future. And of course, they're going to want to access this green MIP. So the conversation I've had with them is, look, you need to get your NGBS or LEEDs, your green certification now during new construction, because that's the ticket. That's the ticket that opens the door to green financing down the road. And, some will, they'll question the cost. They'll question maybe the challenges from a scheduling perspective, making sure that the verifications happen and all that. But, when you look at the incremental cost for a green building, it's really not that high. A lot of the buildings that I see, they only have to add a little bit, more maybe in terms of efficiency for some of the equipment to be able to qualify. And it really just boils down to making sure that you have the quality control of a green verifier like D3G coming on site during construction to make sure insulation is done well, to make sure air sealing is done well. And honestly, not only does that help you by getting you the green certification, it's also going to help protect the owners to make sure that that's going to be a green performing building. Just because it's designed to be green is no guarantee that right. It actually will be. So,
yeah, that's the rush that we see, again, fast, fast, fast. Let's get this submitted. And it's often forgotten is the annual compliance SEP scoring that's going to be part of the process for the ongoing future of that loan term. So you really do want to make sure you're focusing on quality construction and thinking about this property a year after it's closed and then therefore afterwards. So we're going to wrap this up. It's right at about 15 minutes. Again, our goal is to keep these podcasts in the 15-minute range because we know everyone's extremely busy right now. Over the next week, we're going to be discussing the brand new CNA e-tool process, which has just been pushed forward with HUD. We were kind of expecting a potential secondary delay, but it's looking like starting Monday, the 27th, that this is live to convert existing CNA e-tools to the new platform. That's going to be a little bit of a challenge for everybody. So we're going to be discussing some of the tips and tricks that you need to be prepared for with your CNA e-tool submissions. So I just wanted to take another second to say thanks for joining us. And please keep an eye out for more of our podcasts in the future discussing the hottest things in the industry. Have a good one. Thanks.